This is a special edition of The Wheelhouse. I'm John Dankosky, and it's Inauguration Day in Connecticut as Ned Lamont becomes Connecticut's 89th governor. We're going to bring you his State of the State speech, his first address to a joint session of the legislature, and also some of the pomp and circumstance surrounding this day. Joining me is Colin McEnroe. He's the host of The Colin McEnroe Show on Connecticut Public Radio. Hi there, Colin.
Hi, John. You know, in the spirit of the day, in the spirit of Ned Lamont, I'd just like to say thank you. Thank you so much, John. You know, it doesn't get said enough, really, what a great job you do. So thank you so, so much.
There's a lot of thank yous today. In just a minute, we're actually going to hear part one of today's festivities, which happened at the State Armory. But before we get to that, Colin, I mean, why exactly do we do it this way? Talk a little bit about the importance of a day like this and the pageantry that goes around this speech and all the other stuff that we're going to talk about.
It's an interesting question. This morning, Kevin Rennie talked about the peaceful transition of power. And there is something to be said for that. This isn't a huge handover of power since it's Democrat to Democrat. But I think it does call attention to a new phase. And there's this kind of solemnizing aspect to these ceremonies. They exist for a reason. They may seem cumbersome or boring or overblown, but I think ritual does help remind people anyway that there is a state government and a new leader's in place and that they should be listening to see what changes are coming.
The swearing-in of the new governor took place a little bit after noon time today, around 12:30, at the State Armory, which, if you don't know, is located right next to the Legislative Office Building. It's about two blocks from the Capitol. Ned Lamont took the oath of office from his friend, former Chief Justice of the Connecticut Supreme Court, Chase Rogers, and he followed it up with a short speech. So let's listen to the swearing-in of Ned Lamont.
Please raise your right hand. Do you, Edward Minor Lamont, solemnly swear that you will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Connecticut, so long as you continue a citizen thereof, and that you will faithfully discharge, according to law, the duties of the office of governor to the best of your abilities, so help you God?
I do.
Congratulations.
At this point, Ned Lamont is the new governor of the state of Connecticut, and you can see former governor Dan Malloy and everyone gathered, standing and applauding as Ned Lamont shakes hands, and he hugs those on stage, including the family of his who's there, and he's about to tell you about his family. Again, here's Governor Ned Lamont.
How are we doing so far? So it's a journey, and I could not take one step of it without my family, starting with Annie. Emily, Lindsay, and Teddy. We look out for each other. We're in this together. And that's how I feel about the state of Connecticut, my extended family, and we're in this together. And that includes our freshly minted constitutional officers and Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz. My hat's off to our legislative leaders. We got some work to do together. You ready to get going? And our judicial leaders, and in particular, our great friend who has been a font of such wisdom and friendship for so many years, Chase Rogers. Chase. And I'm happy to join the Governor's Club. I'm proud you're here. Governor Weicker, Governor Rell, Governor Malloy, you've only been an ex-governor for about 30 seconds. But you have something in common, and that's that you've been in the arena. And to paraphrase my favorite president, Teddy Roosevelt, the credit belongs not to the critic on the sidelines, but to the men and women in the arena. And you've been in the arena, you know what it takes, and I'm proud to be following in your footsteps. And just a special shout out to Dan and Kathy. Dan has done 30 years of service to our state as a mayor and as a governor, and you two could not have been more gracious and kind and helpful throughout this transition for Annie and me, and we thank you every day. I'd also like to thank the men and women of the Connecticut National Guard for your assistance in helping us get this coordinated today and hosting us and what you do for our state every day. God bless you. And to Rabbi Goldman and Pastor Steele, Barrett Choir never disappoints, Pastor Steele. Reverend Allberg, you'll soon hear from Saud Anwar. These are great friends of different faiths. But just remember what we have in common and our common humanity. And what brings us together every day is so much bigger than anything that could divide us. And that's what I'll remind you every day as your governor. Where is Ralph sitting? He doesn't mention it, but when we were at the non-denominational Round Hill Community Church, and he welcomed Andy and me and another couple to the church in very Republican Greenwich, as he pointed out, and he said, I'd like to introduce, you know, Alan, he's Lutheran, I'd like to introduce Carrie, she's a Greek Orthodox, and I'd like to introduce Annie, she's an Episcopalian, and I'd like to introduce Ned, he's a Democrat. Yeah, congregation thought that was pretty funny. Okay, so from here, we're gonna be marching over to the state capitol. I'll be escorted by the governor's foot guard. A little history there if you don't know it, but when Jonathan Trumbull was being inaugurated in, I think it was 1756, he was being escorted by the militia, which were overserved and undertrained. It got a little rowdy on the way there, so thus we created the governor's foot guard. For that, I thank you. And I'm also going to be escorted by a group that means something very special to me, and that is the Bridgeport Harding High School Marching Band. I was a volunteer teacher there many years ago, and I remember each and every one of those kids like yesterday. And I am going to work every day as governor to give our kids and all of our kids the very, very best opportunity at the starting line of life and make sure this is going to be an amazing life for them, hopefully right here in the great state of Connecticut. And Susan and I were reminded of this just a few weeks ago when we joined a couple of thousand Connecticut high school students over at the Bushnell for a performance of Hamilton. And had a chance to talk to a bunch of the students beforehand and told them about my favorite song, My Shot. I'm not gonna waste my shot, where the young Alexander Hamilton sings about himself as a scrappy immigrant kid with great opportunities, just like his new nation. And that's what I love about our country. Because every generation we get an opportunity to reinvent ourselves, and every election represents a fresh start, and this is our chance to reinvent Connecticut. Think boldly, act boldly. That's what we mean to do for the next 4 years. So on election day, thousands of voters lined up, often waiting hours in the pouring rain. By the way, Denise, are we gonna do something to speed up voting in this state? Come on. But they waited in the pouring rain because they believed and they knew that their vote can make a difference. And they were not going to throw away their shot, and neither are we. For generations, Connecticut was the most entrepreneurial, inventive, and fast-growing state, located with amazing opportunities, and we still can be. But I will not allow our next 4 years to be defined by a fiscal crisis. Together, we're going to craft an honestly balanced budget, which does not borrow from the future, but invests in the future. We owe our kids, our extended family, nothing less. So, in a couple hours, I'm going to speak to the legislature in the room where it happens, and I'll remind all of us that there's no room for the critic on the sidelines. It'll be easy to vote no, but let's give each other the benefit of the doubt. Let's leave our labels at the door, and let's work like heck to get the yes, and make sure that all of our kids get their shot, okay? So thank you for your faith in me. I won't let you down. We won't let you down. And now let's get down to business. God bless the great state of Connecticut.
That's the sound of the new governor, Ned Lamont, giving his first very brief speech after taking the oath of office. I'm John Dankosky, and this is a special edition of The Wheelhouse. He included in that speech, Colin, not a ton of substance, but he did have a little gentle jab at the Secretary of the State, Denise Merrill. What else did you hear in that brief speech at the Armory?
I'm sure she was really thrilled about that. And I'm sure she's also gone to him and said, you know, it's the New Haven Registrars of Voters. I can't control these people. So I'll say this, that on a day of two speeches, Ned Lamont was nervous in his first speech. You could actually sort of see it in his body language. And his speech patterns were a little bit more constricted. He actually had his hand spread on the podium, and we kind of pat the podium from time to time. It's an indication that, you know, this whole idea of being governor and maybe the solemnity of the occasion had, I don't know, just gotten to him a little bit anyway. He relaxed a lot more as the day went on. We now know times 10 that he went to see Hamilton, and it really made a big impression on him. He quoted from it twice in this speech. There'll be other quotations as the day goes on. He needs to go see another musical. I would recommend Rent. He could do Seasons of Love or something like that. Other than that, I think what you hear is a guy trying to, well, I mean, there really were, all kidding aside, an awful lot of thank yous and an awful lot of let's hear it for this person and that person and these people, and they do a really great job. And I think that's very much his style. I'm always reminded of people who come from a certain kind of background are very, very careful about manners. They've had a certain kind of manners drilled into them from a very young age, which is not to suggest that people from other backgrounds don't have good manners, but there's a certain way that you do things. And I think you're seeing that this whole speech was the equivalent of a really, really nice vellum card with a lovely handwritten note in blue-black ink on it.
Okay, so this is a lot of pageantry. It starts at the State Armory, and there's the swearing in, a very brief speech, and then people gather outside, and that's why we want to bring in Patrick Scahill, a Connecticut Public Radio reporter. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, John.
You were there for the next piece of this, and there's a traditional parade that goes, as we said, from the Armory, just a few blocks, not much of a parade, but there's a lot
of history
in there, and you went with someone who knows a lot about these things.
I did, so I met up with state historian Walt Woodward, and before we sort of understand why there's a parade that's sort of in the middle of winter when no one really wants to show up because it's really cold outside, we have to just get a little bit of history here. And one piece of interesting trivia that Walt gave to me was Connecticut actually used to have two state capitals, Hartford and New Haven. The General Assembly bounced between both for a long, long time. This is an arrangement that was sort of odd. It actually dated back to colonial times. And then in the 1870s, P.T. Barnum, of all people, says, you know, hey, maybe you really shouldn't do this whole two capital thing. You probably want to pick one. So we'll have more on that in a minute. But before that change happened, Election Day, as it was called back then, was actually a really, really big deal. And this was a big deal for the Puritans living in Connecticut who didn't celebrate Christmas and Easter. And it was really for them a day to party. And here's Walt Woodward on that.
This was a day that came back then in May. It came at the end of winter. It celebrated the fact that they elected their own officials and they could combine religion, a party, a cautionary tale to the governor, a school break day, and a baking contest all in one.
So it sounds like quite a day. I know everyone's rocking there. So what happened to this tradition?
So it was quite a day, but when Connecticut dropped its co-capital arrangement, it also lengthened the amount of time a governor served, and that meant, unfortunately, no more annual parade. So that giant May party was replaced with, I guess we would say, a somewhat diminished winter celebration. That actually didn't really go over well right when it happened. Here's Woodward on that.
When they did this 1879 election, the first one to at the new state capitol, well, it must not have been the event of old, because in May, the governor's foot guard held a memorial parade to kind of celebrate what election day used to be.
So that extra parade, unfortunately, did not last. But today, the governor's foot guard is still a big part of the inauguration day traditions. They're kind of a big symbol of both election day, Connecticut government, and really just what it meant for a state to elect its own officials.
So when you were talking with the state historian, Walt Woodward, did he provide any other accounts of election day?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a lot of accounts of people thinking back to this one thing, actually. So a yummy treat called election cake. This is this sort of very, very elaborate cake that you would see on like the Great British Baking Show or something. It's a 10 to 15 pound cake, has a lot of raisins in it, a lot of thick sugar icing. And on election day, kids could sort of eat it with no limits. And a lot of adults kind of thought back on that nostalgically.
I mean, I don't know, Colin. It sounds much more festive than what we have today.
Yeah, I'd already read about this. There's a book by Michael Schudson. It's either called I think it's called The Civic Good, but it might be called The Good Citizen. And he talks about this, how in the 19th century, elections were the incredibly festive partying atmosphere. And sometimes the party would go on for days and there would be parades and other stuff in cities. And I think it kind of, you know, suggested a different level of engagement. I think quite a few fermented beverages were also consumed, which may have also distorted their civic judgment.
Yeah, so maybe no fermented beverages along the parade route today, Patrick.
Not that
again,
I saw.
A short parade. I mean, what was the scene today?
A short parade, and you know, I was actually joking with Harriet Jones, our editor, that the amount of years that this parade has actually been going on is now competing with the amount of people that actually show up to it. So there weren't a lot of people there. It was a lot of insiders, a lot of politicians, a lot of reporters, and then there were, you know, people who kind of just stumbled upon this and were kind of wondering who this person was walking down the street. But again, not to diminish the event, it was a festive day, and it really does carry on a long, long Connecticut tradition.
Patrick Scahill covers a lot of things for Connecticut Public Radio, but today he's on the History Beat. Thank you so much, Patrick.
Thanks, John.
When we come back, we're going to hear newly elected Governor Lamont's State of the State address. I'm John Dankosky with Colin McEnroe in this special edition of The Wheelhouse. And here's Pastor Kelsey Steele and the Verrett Choir from a performance at today's inauguration ceremony. This is a special edition of The Wheelhouse. I'm John Dankosky. It is Inauguration Day in Connecticut as Ned Lamont becomes Connecticut's 89th governor. In just a bit, Colin McEnroe will rejoin me. But first, let's hear the new governor's first speech in front of a joint session of the General Assembly. The Hall of the House, as usual, is packed with not just lawmakers, but constitutional officers, press, and dozens of other legislative aides. Here is Governor Ned Lamont.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, Senator Fasano, Representative Claridis, my fellow state officials, members of the General Assembly, and the judicial branch, Lieutenant Governor Bisewitz, honored guests, and people of the great state of Connecticut. Thank you for welcoming me to the room where it happens. I'm especially proud to be here with my family, Annie, Emily, Lindsay, Teddy. Sometimes it gets pretty feisty at the Lamont dinner table. We're all in it together, and we're not shy. And at the end of the day, I feel the same way about the people of the great state of Connecticut. And you're my extended family, and we're all in it together. I want to say to Dan Malloy, many thanks for your decades of public service. And to Nancy Wyman, you're not going far. We're going to keep you pretty busy. And where's George Jepson? I thought you were down here somewhere. Yeah. George, you're just across the street from me now. You could run, but you can't hide. We got, you know, because we are just getting started. A few weeks ago, as you heard, Susan and I joined a couple of thousand high school students at the Bushnell for a performance of Hamilton. Before the curtain went up, we discussed with the students the meaning of my favorite song, My Shot, sung by young Alexander Hamilton, an immigrant teenager from the Caribbean, young, scrappy, and hungry, like the nation he is joining. And he's not going to throw away his shot. And what I love about America is that every generation, we get a chance to reinvent ourselves. And every election gives us a fresh start. And this is our chance to reinvent Connecticut, to think big and act boldly. And Connecticut has always been the state where it happens. We are an inventive state. We shaped the defense industry with the invention of the world's first submarine in Old Saybrook. No, I thought you knew your history. Then we reinvented it with the first nuclear submarine in, now you got it. We revolutionized multiple industries through the invention of rubber that could withstand cold and heat. We did that in, there you go. We redefined the workplace with the invention of the portable typewriter in Stamford. You guys are, you're reading the teleprompter. That's, that doesn't impress anybody. And the world's first helicopter was designed and piloted by Igor Sikorsky in, that's it. And a century later, Sikorsky's factory is still there. An electric boat remains the largest submarine manufacturer in the world. And they are two of Connecticut's largest employers. A proud piece of Connecticut's history. But over the last generation, Connecticut's entrepreneurial zip has slipped a bit. We're no longer a place that is viewed as hospitable or encouraging the new businesses. Connecticut, it's time to return to our inventive and entrepreneurial roots. Our future lies in doubling down on what makes us great and reimagining our unique potential. And it starts with the best educated workforce in the world. Look, I always go visit our schools because that's where I get a look at the future. My first stop is often in Bridgeport at Harding High School, where I helped out many years ago as a volunteer, and whose band just helped lead our parade up here to the state capitol. Their old high school was pretty beat. But you should have seen the excitement in the eyes of those kids and their parents and their teachers just a few months ago on opening day at the new Harding High School. You know, the custodians told me something I remember, that the old Harding was a mess at the end of the day, but the new Harding was still pretty neat at day's end. And that just reminded me that showing the students that we believe in them, they showed pride in themselves and their school, and a lot of you helped make that happen. Remember, you make a difference. And it's the same optimism and pride that I saw at the new Career Academy in Waterbury, where nearly 98% of the students graduate. And many of those students go on to great colleges. Many go on to apprenticeships in healthcare and advanced manufacturing. These are the Connecticut jobs for Connecticut students. I saw a lot of that same optimism as a professor for many years at Central Connecticut State University. Somebody was from CCSU. But my favorite day during the campaign, because it was after one of those interminable debates, was at UConn, where we saw the Black Hawk helicopters flying low overhead. And I joined all the students. We ran to check out the action, and we saw the choppers landing at the UConn School of Engineering. It was a Sikorsky job recruitment drive, encouraging Connecticut students to start their careers right here in this state. Anybody recruit you that way? It didn't happen to me. But none of this would be possible without the dedication of Connecticut's teachers. We have the greatest teachers in the world. Sometimes we ought to tell them that. Thank you for what you do, teachers. Thank you. Exactly. Exactly. That's it. Because, you know, Connecticut, we don't have silicon, we don't have natural gas, but we've always had the best trained, the most educated, the most productive, the most entrepreneurial workforce in the world. That is our strategic advantage, and it's more important in the 21st century than ever before. You know that companies roam the globe looking for talent. Look no further. You can stop right here. And so at this point, you're probably thinking, that's all well and good, Gov, but the budget is a mess. And how can we be a laboratory for democracy when we have such a hard time paying our bills? We cannot afford to let the next 4 years be defined by a fiscal crisis. The fate of our great state is on a knife's edge. If we choose inaction and more of the same, we fail. But if we choose to be creative and bold, leadership, a commitment to make the hard and difficult choices necessary to right the wrongs of the past, we will succeed. Let's fix the damn budget once and for all. You with me? Thank you. That's it. Put the pressure on you. So here's the deal. In 6 weeks, I present you with a budget, which is in balance, not just for a year, but for the foreseeable future, so that mayors and selectmen and business and labor leaders, teachers and police officers know what to expect. And together we will deliver on what we say, a budget on time, honestly balanced. And however, I want to be clear, no more funny math, no more budgetary gamesmanship. And I come from the world of small business, where at the end of the month, the numbers have to add up, or the lights can go out. And don't tell me you hear from some consultant there's $1 billion in easy spending cuts. I'll say, show me the money, or I show you the door. And unlike in Washington, D.C., our government doesn't shut down, and we don't play those games here. Right? We can't tell students that school is closed today. Police and fire departments can't say, we'll respond to that call another time. We can't tell the most vulnerable that their services that they depend upon, maybe they'll reopen later in the year. We don't do that. And I refuse to invest any time in the blame game. Who's responsible for this crisis? Who's to blame? Who cares? It's real, it's here, and it's time to confront it head on. And one last thing, please don't tell me you've done your share and now it's somebody else's turn. It's all of our turns. Fix the budget, invest in the future, and nothing can stop us. All right, how do you do it? Fixing the budget does require a big table and an open door. And I'm ready to listen to any good idea. I'll take the heat and I'll share the credit. And I know the budget vote's gonna be a tough one, no doubt. It'll be easy to vote no, but I have a responsibility to get us to yes. And we only get there by working together. Okay, business leaders, some of you have already stepped up and are ready to take the lead when it comes to workforce development and positioning Connecticut students for these Connecticut jobs, and I thank you, but there's more to do. And I thank my Business Advisory Council, some of whom are here, which is already reaching out to new companies, which may be a great fit for the state of Connecticut. Thank you. And I say to the volunteers out there and the philanthropic leaders, giving back is the highest form of citizenship. Ask what you can do for your state. I'm excited by your willingness to invest in our future, and I am looking forward to great things ahead. More on that to come. Thank you. To our state employees and our labor leaders, first of all, thank you for the incredible work you do on behalf of the people of the great state of Connecticut. People don't thank you enough for what you do. And I'm a strong believer in labor and the right to organize and collective bargaining. So is Julie. But now is our time to show that collective bargaining works in tough times as well as good times. And it's my job, as liabilities grow faster than assets, to make the changes necessary to ensure that retirement security is a reality for our younger as well as our older state employees. And we got to do that without breaking the bank. And mayors and first selectmen, nothing will compromise your feisty independence. I heard that. But so many services and back office functions can be delivered at a much lower cost and much more efficiently if they're operated on a shared or regional basis. We will break down those silos, engage in bulk purchasing, everything from healthcare to technology. The taxpayers of our state can no longer afford to subsidize inefficiency. So Connecticut is a land of steady habits, and we will return to the habits which made us such a great economic powerhouse a generation ago. But we also need to change the game and create new habits that capitalize on our strengths. Our great state is strategically located between two super cities. And we need to harness our highly educated workforce and create a new Connecticut for tomorrow. And how do we do this? I'll be focusing on four priorities. First, I'm going to take the lead investing in the first all-digital government. A reverse engineer every transaction from the taxpayer's shoes. The entry point to e-Connecticut will be through a digital front door, a one-stop shop for everything our citizen needs. We will be online, not in the line. It won't be done overnight, so let's start today. And secondly, to attract those millennials and top talent and leading companies, Connecticut will have to invest wisely in our urban centers, making them affordable and lively, where families want to live, work, and play. And that means great schools, safe streets, and making our cities the first 5G in New England. The telecommunications companies are ready to start building. Let's harness that excitement. And by the way, let's get Wi-Fi access to all of our local town squares. That's something we can do. Third, none of this is possible unless we have a 21st century transportation system. When the Merritt Parkway opened in 1940, it wasn't uncommon for people to pull over to the side of the road and picnic. It was so beautiful. Well, I've spent a lot of time on these roads, and so have you. And when we pull over, it's because we're so damn frustrated by gridlock. That bumper-to-bumper traffic, let me tell you, gridlock not only causes headaches, it costs us jobs, and we're not going to let that happen. You know what we do? I believe in the 30-30-30. I want the following to be a reality. 30 minutes from Hartford to New Haven, 30 minutes from New Haven to Stamford, and 30 minutes from Stamford to New York. That's good. Don't worry, Neil, we're going to have spurs from Waterbury and New London as well. This is going to be interconnected. And this isn't a pipe dream. This is a necessity, a modern infrastructure by road, rail, air, and water to unlock the full economic potential of our state. Fourth, Connecticut's economic revival cannot be only about creating opportunities for some of our people. It's going to be an economy that works for everyone. We will bring our workforce into the 21st century, closely aligning with job training, starting with STEM and coding in K through 12, access to higher education, vo-tech and apprenticeships, good paying jobs for our Connecticut students. That also means bringing not just the workforce into the 21st century, but bringing the workplace into the 21st century. And that starts with making paid family leave a reality for all of our parents, all of our parents. For all of our parents, they don't have to choose between the child they love and the job they need. And a 21st century workplace also means moving to a $15 minimum wage. We will. We're going to do it responsibly. We're going to do it over time. But so that those same parents can afford to be able to provide for their children and still have a little time left over to actually see their children. We're going to get that done. Okay. One of the first governors that comes from the world of business. I think I know how to get this done. I'm going to be hyper-focused on job creation. And my primary objective is to get this economy moving again. And how do we extend opportunity for all those being left behind? Growth. What's the long-term fix to our budget? Growth. How do we attract the next generation of talent to Connecticut? Growth. Now, somebody like that. Now, all that economic growth takes time to nurture, which is why, again, we start today and we start together. All right, I'm a new governor. You're a new legislature. Even some of you have been around for a while. It's a new day here. And what can you expect from me? I think I'm a straight shooter. I think I'm an honest broker. I think I'm a pretty good listener. I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. But I do have a strong sense of where we need to go and what the people of Connecticut expect from us. And last November, thousands of people waited forever, sometimes hours, in the pouring rain. You know, Google told me that the number one search was, how do I vote? And they waited in those long lines and voted with extraordinary turnout because they know that their vote makes a difference. They believe that they can make a difference, and we will make a difference, and we're going to do that together. So let's work together and produce a budget for the people that doesn't borrow from the future, but invests in the future. And like those kids from Harding High who believed in themselves, I believe in Connecticut. And you're here because you believe in Connecticut. Let's get Connecticut growing again. History has its eyes on you, all of us. Let's do this together. May God bless you, and may God bless the hardworking people of the great state of Connecticut. Love you all. Thank you.
That's Governor Ned Lamont giving his State of the State, his first address, to a joint session of the legislature. I'm John Dankosky, and when we come back on this special edition of The Wheelhouse, Colin McEnroe will join me for analysis. Stay with us. I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Country, I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I'm gonna get a scholarship to King's College. I probably should brag. This is a special edition of The Wheelhouse. I'm John Dankosky. We've been following the swearing-in of Ned Lamont as Connecticut's 89th governor. His State of the State address we just heard. It was the first address he's made to a joint session of the General Assembly. It happened at the state capitol earlier today. I'm joined now by Colin McEnroe, the host of The Colin McEnroe Show on WNPR. And Colin, you were there for that speech. So first of all, give me your broad outline of what you thought about it. What did you think Ned Lamont did there?
Well, first of all, the odds are in your favor. If you're a newly elected governor and both chambers of the legislature are the majority of your party, you'd really have to really screw things up to not have a pretty good day. That said, I thought Ned Lamont was unusually relaxed. He played with the crowd. He did some sort of Mr. Rogers type call and response with them, like, who knows where the helicopters come from? And I thought that really kind of played to his strengths a little bit, much more confident than he was even this morning when he spoke. So I thought that was all great. Once again, he is continuing to try to maintain this sense of good feelings. I can tell you that for some of his applause lines, the Republicans got up, led by their leaders, Len Fasano and Thomas Claridis. The Republicans stood up with the Democrats. Once again, I think that's sort of emblematic of the kind of good feelings vibe here. We're now up to a total of 5 Hamilton references. I find myself thinking, the Kennedy administration was equated with Camelot, although that really didn't happen until 1963. Jackie really posthumously really engendered that particular idea, but clearly we're in the Hamilton administration here. I will lastly say it's not often that you hear a governor do an impersonation during his inaugural address.
Speaking of JFK.
Yeah, he did do a JFK impersonation.
At the second half of the speech, and this is what always happens with these State of the State addresses, is there may be good feeling. You get a chance to know who the new governor is, how he plays the room. But then we get to the litany of things that he wants to do as governor. He talks about of course, great schools, safe streets. These are the things that sound great, and we can all get behind them, but there's no way to know how we're going to pay for them.
Right. I mean, he starts out by saying, we got to balance the damn budget. And I think he correctly sets the tone of saying, until we don't feel as though we're in a fiscal crisis, we can't do anything. But we want to do things. We don't want to have that feeling. Now, it's an easy thing to say. It's a much more difficult thing to do. But yes, all the things that you're talking about, for the most of them, come with really high price tags, too. That's the stuff that he's talking about is not going to be cheap. I think it's all totally admirable. And every incoming executive, whether at the state or federal level, they do this. I mean, you don't want to come in with no list of stuff that you're going to do.
I want to turn now to Ryan Lindsay, a WNPR reporter, who is there covering this today. And it was your first inauguration day,
yes.
Your first time seeing one of these. Before we get to some of the people that you talked to, what was your feeling? What did you sense in that room full of all these lawmakers today?
I think it was generally a lot of excitement and a lot of camaraderie that you could see. Folks were really, you know, engaged in the conversations and the speeches that were being given. There was a lot of applause, a lot of cheering happening, which was cool to see and witness as we're in a, you know, very tumultuous political time.
One of the things you did is you sought out some lawmakers, including a lot of the new lawmakers who are there. Tell me about what you heard from some of them.
Yeah, I mean, for Kushner, you know, who is 66, it's quite the time to become a senator.
This is what I say. It's Julie Kushner who unseated Michael McLaughlin, the long-serving Danbury-based senator.
And she's a Democrat.
So it was cool to see her family there. Her granddaughter, it was her birthday, so she had like a gift for her in the elevator. She was getting her ears pierced.
Let's actually hear a little bit from Julie Kushner.
Today has been incredibly exciting. It's just hard to believe that now I have been sworn in and I'm a state senator, and there's so much awesome responsibility that goes with that, so it feels a little overwhelming. You know, I feel like there's great energy for getting things done this session, and I know that the people in my district who voted for me, who worked on the campaign, who really, you know, put such great energy into this election, they have a lot of optimism about what we can do here in Connecticut, and I'm excited about being part of that.
What was cool also to see in the Senate was that a lot of the women were wearing white, especially a lot of the freshmen, and so that just reflects back on the suffrage movement of the 1900s. And again, a lot of the Democrats, wore white, at different points recently, especially when Trump's been giving speeches. So to see that reflected here in Connecticut and that sort of same energy as far as a lot of women coming into this space has been really exciting to watch. And even just, you know, they had yellow roses at each of the freshmen. So even Matt Lesser, you know, he had his yellow rose there. And that was really cool just to kind of observe that sense of like welcoming that was going on.
We also got a chance to talk to a new GOP representative. This is Leslie Hill from Canton.
I'm grateful for the opportunity to serve the residents of Canton and Avon and for the trust that they've placed in me to be their representative here in Hartford. My biggest priorities are going to be anything that's going to help get our economy going in the direction it needs to go, and that includes dealing with our pension deficit, dealing with the budget deficit, working on improving employment opportunities without causing any harm to the people who need our help and our towns and schools.
That's Leslie Hill, a new GOP representative from Canton, talking to WNPR's Ryan Lindsay. We just have a moment left, Colin, but it is interesting. Republicans is in this new space. There's fewer of them at the state capitol. They're going to be in a little bit of a different place than they even have been under this new governor. What do you expect out of some of these new Republican lawmakers in that caucus?
Well, until Ryan said that, I didn't even get the significance. But actually, Themis Claridis, I believe, the Republican minority leader, is also wearing white today.
Wow.
So I think that they will at least for a while try to play nice. Today it's like Disneyland and Ned is Mickey. You know, a month or two from now, he may be Goofy and they will let him know that. But for a while, I think everybody's going to try to play nice.
Colin McEnroe hosts the Colin McEnroe Show here on Connecticut Public Radio. As always, Colin, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
And we'll see you next week again on The Wheelhouse. And thanks so much to WNPR's Ryan Lindsay. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.
Our program is produced by Scott Breedy and Katie Filarski. Thanks for joining us here on The Wheelhouse, this special edition on Connecticut Public Radio. We'll be right back.